This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. I'm Floyd Hall, and this is a Wonderroot Arts in Atlanta conversation. I have the pleasure of being joined today by artist Daniel Flores and developer James Lytle. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, very good. Thanks.
Well, let's get into some of the bio aspect of why you two are here in this arts and technology conversation. James, you are the developer of an art app called Fenestra. And Daniel, you are, among other things, besides being a great artist, you are developing your own game called Art Life. So, James, I would love for you to give some background on Fenestra and maybe where you are right now in terms of the app and the development and maybe some backstory.
Sure. I'll start off by saying this is a project that me and my brother, Seth, have been working on. We started probably with the idea about 3 years ago. And he's actually officially, quote unquote, the developer. I take more of the design role, design lead on things. But we have a fun time together working on both aspects. I guess about several years ago, I just started getting really involved in the arts community. I wanted to be surrounded with more people that thought like I did, were like-minded in their creativity and bent for wanting to see things differently in the world and to imagine, let their imagination kind of run wild sometimes. So I started doing that and just kind of noticed through conversations and getting together that there was really a lot of artists that weren't reaching their potential and a lot of struggles and a lot of difficulty and, you know, doubting and just different things, lots of questions. And some of them are, you know, practical things. Some of them are related to, you know, what sort of art they should be making, whether they should be making art for the man or art for themselves. So there's a whole variety of things, but, you know, I don't know, just one day, the idea just kind of poured into my mind, I think. I just started thinking, you know, because I work with digital products a lot. I work with interaction design. I'm on the computer all the time building products for my full-time gig. So it just kind of made sense to me that artists could be in a mobile world just kind of easily sharing their artwork with others, and it would be a great way for them to casually promote the work that maybe is just in their closet or, you know, or their or maybe they do something else full time. Like some of our backstory is that my dad, actually both my parents went to the Maryland Institute of Art. He graduated. He was getting married to my mom. Couldn't really make a living on art at the time, and so he became a master plumber. So he's been doing plumbing all these years, but he's still this incredible artist. And he still does this art because that's just a part of who he is. In retrospect, I think that's a lot of the subconscious motivation is, my dad has this huge, like, 8-foot by 4-foot painting in his house that, you know, he just can't find a location for it, can't find a buyer for it. And doesn't have the time to promote himself either. So we just wanted to create an easy way for someone like him, as well as, you know, someone who's a professional that takes it, you know, much more from the business side of things, just easily be able to get the artwork out there and have some fun aspects to it too, you know. Yeah. So, what was the other? What was there?
You answered all of the questions.
I did. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. You're good.
Good.
Dan.
Yes, sir.
Talk about Art Life and the story behind that and maybe what drew you to go down that path.
So art life is what my life is all about. But beyond the game, beyond where it is right now, is actually what my life has been since the day I first drew something on paper or wherever whatever I did. Because as children, we all draw. Everybody draws with crayons or with boogers. Something. Little children draw. And so I did. And I do not remember a day when I have not been drawing. And so I sketch, and to this day now I paint, I do tattoos, and I'm all involved in art shows. I curate art shows. I mentor artists in the business of art, not just the talent. But art life, to me, is a part of who I am and what I do. And this is way before I even knew that artists could get paid for drawing. I've seen comic books when I was a kid. I've seen cartoons. But it never occurred to me that artists, there was those people who were doing that, creating that content and getting paid for it. And so I always loved the feeling of creating something new or even copying something that already exists, like Batman. And it's taken over my life to the point where I don't want to do anything else. This is it. I give respect to anybody who fights through rush hour traffic to get to work and puts in their hours at whatever type of job they have. But I don't want to do that. And I want to draw. I want to create. I want to explore my creativity and my express myself. And through those different mediums that I've learned in all these years, I've actually found my niche, several niches, to get paid with. And I've done that. I've owned a tattoo shop in the past for 8 years. I ran it. I don't have a shop anymore. I work at a different shop than the one I owned. But the tattooing is still there. It makes me money. I create fine art. I sell it. I've used Finestra, the app, also to post some of my artwork. I use all the internet that is available, all the websites that are available on the internet. I use them to sell and promote my art. And art, to me, is my purpose. Now, how do I use that art and what do I create to make an impact, and not just my life, but the people who see it? I don't know. I think that's why I've gotten into so many different mediums, just to figure out what that is going to be and what that it is. And the latest medium that I'm working on is a mobile game. And I've always wanted to do comics ever since I was a kid. I've always admired Batman and the Punisher, especially those two characters because they're human. All other characters have superpowers and they come from space. Superman's okay. But Batman, that's the man right there. And so I always thought that I wanted to do comic books. Once I got older and I learned how to do sequential art, I found out that comic book artists don't make much money. And so I switched gears. But now I'm coming back around and saying, okay, I can make a mobile game with characters that I've created in the last 20 years of my art career. I have stories that go with them. I can put them in this medium that everybody's walking around in their pocket, in a medium that entertains people, and they can learn some of the through this medium, through this comic books, through the mobile game. They can learn some of the some of the experiences that I've gone through as an artist, and that I've found after all this time by getting to know other artists that we all share the same type of experience. All artists experience it differently and learn different lessons, but the process is still there. There's a lot of commitment, a lot of time spent getting to know your skills, growing your skills, and then some of us learn how to market our skills. But the experience is there. No one can do the art for you. You have to do it yourself. No one can take a shower for you. You have to shower your own body. Right, so the same way is with art. You have to put the art materials in your hands and create something. And so that's the experience that I want to bring into the mobile game and into the comic books that we're producing now with Art Life.
Well, looking at the opportunity that technology is affording you now to tell the story, to get it out there into the hands of millions of people, both with Art Life as well as Fenestra, James, either of you, well, both of you, what are the challenges in that? Because I think it's often easier to think about the opportunity to reach all of these people, but what's the challenge in using technology as that conduit, if you will?
It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time and dedication, and there's a greater initial investment, you know, to get to that point where, okay, you know, maybe this is businessly, you know, viable, you know, as a business, and we're still, you know, working through that. It's that belief and that vision and that imagination that you're onto something, you know, pretty unique and something that would entertain people and also be effective. I think in the technology space, you do have a lot of competition. I'll just talk about apps because that's what, you know, we're talking about. There's tons of apps out there, you know. I was talking with my roommate. He said he's got, like, you know, hundreds of apps, and, you know, he just downloaded or deleted 100, and he's still got way too much. You know, he's just like, there's this sea of apps, and it just becomes this little bite-sized bits of information. It's like, it's almost like tweets, like you think of, you know, blog posts to Twitter. It's like, this is like what websites are to, you know, your phone or your what websites are now. It's just these tiny little things that people sling around and use, and but they can be super powerful. And so I think for us, the one of the big challenges is getting to a point where people don't think of that there's a utility and a usefulness there, that people don't just think of it as an app on your phone, but something that opens up an experience around you where you are in your community. And so we're trying to work through that with some strategies now.
That's a big challenge. Creating something. There's already a long list of challenges to create that thing that you're doing, the app. And then the next challenge is to convince people that it's something useful that they can actually use very often, as often as they use their phone or their or focus on their career to do things, because it's real easy because of there's a lot of apps. A lot of them do some of the similar things with each other, and so then people forget it or move on to the next big thing. And that's a challenge right there. Even with mobile games, there's always something hot, something new, and everything has its cycles.
James, you talked about the startup aspect in terms of raising capital, and I think Daniel, you're in the process of raising money currently for Art Life as well. Being in that space where this is an art-focused product for both of you, it's still taking the art part of it away. It's still like a lot of other entities or just products where you're raising startup money and then you're trying to figure out how to then grow that, further develop what you've started, and then at some point continue to sustain that. And then if the market shifts, how do you adjust? So in many ways, there are a lot of similarities between existing products that are already out there, but this has a specific art focus to it. Give some more context to that.
Yeah. Like how do you mean, like how to go about raising money or how we think about that initial investment?
More or less how you all thought about that initial investment.
I mean, we didn't, you know, decide to be entrepreneurs or even do a startup. It was kind of like, I think a lot of young startups are, and, you know, or first time entrepreneurs, you have this really cool idea. You kind of have someone, you know, who's willing to work on something with you. if you're not alone. And you just start building the idea and working through it and imagining, you know, how this could be really useful. So it's a discovery process at the beginning. It's still a discovery process now. The biggest thing is, I think about it as your time. You know, that's the biggest thing you're investing, because that's really all we have. And I know I put a lot of that in.
Dan, what about you? I know you have a team for Art Life. So talk about putting that team together. And then, again, looking at that initial investment, how are you going about trying to secure those funds?
So those are the challenges you were mentioning earlier. They start off with first being good at what you do so that you are able to contribute something, create the idea, work on the idea that you come up on, but then you need to find other talented people who can help you with their respective talents, including a developer. So the developer that I have, he spent years becoming a developer that he is. He has actually written a couple of books and on code. So he's a very talented guy. And that's a challenge in finding people who have a talent, have a skill and who will work with you. And knowing that there's no money right now, you know, and the money, the startup world exists and the app world exists, and there are companies who've created amazing apps and made a lot of money. So you know that the possibility of earning money is there. But right now, when you start off with the idea, you don't have access to that money yet until you create something or start making waves to the point where people will hand you some money. You convince them to give you some money. Our challenge was to find a way to tell the story, to communicate the information that I have in my head onto paper, and that's where the team came in. I got a project manager who's very, very precision focused, and I need that. My wife does that to me also. She's been on my team for a long time. I wouldn't be doing half of the stuff I do now if it wasn't for her. And as a creative person, I think of stuff all the time. I always come up with great ideas. Oh, we should do this and we should do that. And little things will spark a great idea. But of course, we all only have 24 hours in a day. And so my wife is the one to pull me back and say, well, let's think of how this is going to work. You know, let's think of where we can find the money for that. And then that's when you start thinking about this. This is a business. It can be a business. And now we need to find someone to help pay for this. And so with our mobile game, I got the team, we got talented people, and now we need to find money to carry us to the end, to have a final product, and to bring people into the experience of what Art Life is. And one of the very popular methods of raising money for startups or any product and services out there, mostly products really, is crowdfunding. And so... I have a couple of advisors who are deep into the crowdfunding industry. One of them, he is a founder of a social network for crowdfunders called SchmoozeBiz. And another one of our advisors, he runs classes and workshops for crowdfunding, Crowd Endowed. And just being around them and sharing with them my story and what I'm working on, one of them jumped up and said, you're ready. You should do it now. And it's scary because you've never done something like that. And you as an artist, you're a creative person. You're just focused on the work that you have to do and don't understand the other parts of what it takes to create the business. But I sat down and went over everything that we have and studied some of the campaigns that are out there and said, okay, we should do it. And we jumped on Kickstarter. We've been promoting the campaign 2 months before it even started. Started getting people hyped up about the project, about the characters, about the story, about the whole complete project. And we have a very unique project in that it covers comic books and a mobile game and fine art and coloring books. Because those are the worlds that I live in when it comes to my art. So I think that we can bring it all in together and tell the story to different types of people who may be interested in just one particular medium. And so that's where we're at right now. We're actively raising the Kickstarter campaign, and we have a small goal, but it's a goal that we know we can attain, and we're pushing really hard. We're 1 week into it. ArtLifeTheGame.com is where there's plenty of info for that.
And Dan, did you have any other examples of successful art-related ventures in the crowdfunding space? Because a lot of people who look at crowdfunding normally think of products. What were some of the examples that you may have come across that made you realize, okay, we can do this?
Right. Well, I know, number one, we did a lot of research. And because I've been around in the art world for a long time in Atlanta, I know a lot of people in Atlanta who are professionals at their art. And so I know a couple comic book artists. And one of those artists last year, he did a Kickstarter for a comic book, and he didn't make it. And so I talked to him, and he explained some of the things that he fell short on into raising the money. And so then he did another one this year, and this one did reach his goal. But along that process, he also, on the first campaign when he failed, he also got a job out of it because it raised his profile. All that marketing and social media that you're doing during a campaign, it also raises your profile and showing other people who you are. And so looking at him as an example, I've seen other campaigns here in Atlanta and other artists, including an artist who put together an art book. And so I always felt that if someone has, another human person can do it, then I can do it. You know, I just need to go through the steps that they went through, learn the lessons they learned, and then apply it. And so now with ours, there are physical goods like the artwork and the fine art or the comic books and the coloring books. And then there's that virtual product, which is the mobile game. So I haven't seen any crowdfunding campaigns that are local whom I know who were in the game. But I have backed a lot of campaigns who are games, and I've seen them. And seen a lot of projects. So just my experience and learning by seeing what others do is what helped us in putting together our campaign. It gives us hope that we can get there and do it.
You got it.
Now, James, I don't think we've talked about Finestra from a detailed perspective. Like, what exactly does Finestra do? Like, I've downloaded the app, so I know what it does, but I would love for you to talk specifically about what Finestra does and how you've involved the artists and how you are somehow complementing the art experience, if you will, for individuals who may go to galleries or not. So talk more about Finestra, some of the actual details of the app.
Yeah, sure. If you download it from the App Store, it's free to download, and as soon as you open it up, we've launched in Atlanta, so it's exclusively in Atlanta right now. And when you open it up, the first thing you see panning by is local artwork to Atlanta. So it's the newest or it's the featured artwork in Atlanta. And really what we're trying to do is help people find artwork that speaks to them. So we do that in different ways, but a lot of it is about bringing down the wall between the community and the art world, between the artwork in artist closets or at the coffee shop or at the gallery, and people who maybe don't go to those places normally, but they can download an app and they can start previewing it and personalizing their experience in different ways. Just trying to bridge the gap in a lot of ways. Create an accessible experience. So when people, you know, see the artwork, they can see it on a wall first, and then they can take a picture of their own wall and see it on their wall to scale. in their space. So whether it's their living room or they're out somewhere and they want to preview it somewhere, or if they're an interior decorator and they want to create some really fast, quick previews for clients of theirs, they can do that. And then just hearing the artist's voice is really, really helps to make it less of an impersonal process where, you know, a lot of times, honestly, art is, and the way art is viewed nowadays is pretty impersonal. Sometimes, you know, the artist is kind of in the background, or maybe you can find their bio, you know, eventually. But we're trying to think through how do we kind of bring the artist themselves as a person a little bit more to the foreground, and, you know, creates a little bit more meaning to the artwork itself. You know, and then at the same time, the art's for sale and the price is right there in front of you. So it takes away a lot of the, you know, the blockers, the typical blockers that people have, and, you know, the mystery, the first questions that people often have about artwork, you know, is it going to look good? You know, what colors are in it? How big is it? How much does it cost? You know, can I contact the artist directly? Yeah, you can do all those things. And then for the artist, you know, it takes away a lot of the challenge of like of a website and things. Like I need to take a picture. Now I need to transfer that to my computer. Now I need to, you know, figure out how to make a website, or maybe I already have a website and, you know, I can figure out what page it's in and then configure all that stuff. And that's cool. I think artists should still have their website and everything, but this, you know, just makes it super easy for anyone to, in three steps, you know, add something to the community and then share it online, share it in different ways. And there's other details, but that's kind of an overview.
Well, I did not plan this to happen this way, but as I was thinking about this conversation, when I reached out to you, James, and I reached out to you, Dan, when I went onto the app and was scrolling through the artwork to try to get a sense of who the artists were and to play around with it, quite frankly, Dan, you are an artist who has work on Finestra. So I would love for you to give some perspective for our listeners out there. When you heard about this app, what about it spoke to you, and what made you ultimately decide to jump in?
Well, I am a big fan of Finestra, and that's and not just because...
Not just because I'm sitting not, here.
Not, yes, you're here. Not just because Jane's a good guy, cool guy, and I know him face to face, but, you know... You have to understand the art world and how hard some artists fight to get some type of recognition or just get other people to see their artwork. And so I grew up in a time before the internet, and the only way to get information out, you know, was written or the media, which was at that time just TV and radio. And TV and radio is expensive. To promote yourself, it costs money to create your own flyers and things like that. But as so I've used those tools to promote myself as an artist and the art-related events that I create. And as time has gone on, the internet has given access to people across the board at the same price. You know, access to as long as you're paying for access to the internet and have a machine that can get you there. You have the same tools available to you as Coca-Cola does, as UPS, as any of these big marketing machines have at their fingertips. And from the advent of the internet, I've always kept a profile online somewhere. Anytime there's a new social media network that pops up, because I read a lot of the tech blogs, I create an account. I lock in my The Creative Genius brand, my DTM brand, that's my artist names, and I promote myself. And so since the advent of the smartphones, I've looked at it as the final frontier. Like, now you have access to people who may be looking for you, and all they have to do is pick up their smartphone, which they already have in their hand, and they do a lot of stuff with. And I've thought of how I could get myself an app to promote my work and give people access to me right away. And so when I heard about Finestra and I saw what they're doing, I jumped in. But I'm that kind of artist. I'm very extrovert. I'm an opportunist in some ways. There's a lot of artists who are introverts and don't like talking about their art and so on. And I just thought that when I saw Finestra, it was just another vehicle for me to promote myself. But now we're on the smartphone world, and especially iPhone, because that's where the app is at. And so it would cost me, one regular person, a lot of money to create an app to promote myself. But here's these guys who've done it. And it has links to my email, to my website, to anybody who's on the app looking at my art to communicate with me directly. And so as soon as I saw the app and I heard about it, I created my profile. I've been uploading images ever since. And I tell people about it because it's even though I could direct people to my website, and it's very easy to just say there's an app already, and that's what I'm saying. There's an app for that, and there's an app. It's right there, and just look up my name, and you'll see all my artwork, or the artwork that I have uploaded so far. And so, to me, I see that as an opportunity to promote yourself in a different medium. That's it. So some other artists. We all want to succeed in our art, and that means sometimes making sales. I'm not afraid of that, and so it's perfect.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com. As far as scale, because you mentioned that you're in the Atlanta area currently, what are your plans, if you can divulge them, in terms of scaling the app to other cities? What's that growth plan like in terms of getting other artists in Birmingham, in Charlotte, in Chicago, New York? How are you approaching that part of your growth?
So the app can be downloaded anywhere in the United States right now. And when you go in, there's a place in there that you can request your zip code. So we've had requests from all over the country. And though right now it's just in Atlanta, just artwork that's in Atlanta can be added to Finestra. We've heard from people all over the country. So right now it's a lot of connecting with people that just find us through the app, find us online. You know, I've been meeting with some people involved in festivals, you know, from other states and, you know, different arts communities that are really saying they want to have it in their area. And we absolutely will and hope to get to those places, but we don't want to spread ourselves too thin at this point. Our goal really is to become a sustainable community here in Atlanta. First, we think it's a great test bed for it because it's really diverse and there are maybe not even, you know, Atlanta as a whole is a great community, but it even has its little pockets of communities, which you can get a better sense of, okay, is this thing ready to just, you know, grow and is it a sustainable, entity now? And so once that happens, we absolutely, are going to be more willing to go into other parts of the city or in the country. But we're specifically interested in connecting with communities of people, not just individuals necessarily. So if there are like things like town squares or groups of galleries or groups of artists even that are in another state or in another city, and you know, particularly if they have an event or different things that are actually in the community. So there's a group of artists or a group of patrons that really want to get behind it. We'd love to connect with them and reach out to them first when we expand. But there's really nothing stopping the architecture on the technology side of things. There's nothing stopping us from going to the rest of the country or the world at this point. It's only in English right now. That is a barrier to the rest of the world. But that's just a normal challenge.
I want to say something about this stuff, what Finestra's doing. In the early days of Instagram, it was all Apple, iOS. And then when they brought in Instagram into Android, all the Apple people were upset. Oh, no, this was our app, you know. And I think so I really like what Finestra's doing right now is that they're focused on Atlanta artists, especially I'm an Atlanta artist myself. So I like that. But I know a lot of artists who could benefit, you know, and a lot of, especially artists who I help in trying to get them focused on art as their career. And so if we can help build up the art community here and unite it in a way so that everybody benefits, then I think that's a big, great big step. Atlanta is very artistic. There's a lot of artists here, many different types, not just the visuals. And so I think Finestra is doing a good job of just bringing the Atlanta market up to the forefront. And if they can build, and I hope they will, and I'm sure they will, build it to where it includes other cities, that's great. But the fact that they're focused on Atlanta first, I think that's a really great idea.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like you mentioned, I mean, you talk to any person that's been involved in the Atlanta arts community for a little while, and like they'll continue to say, I mean, there's cool things happening, but there's so much stuff that's disconnected. You know, there's so much division in finding things or connecting with the right audience even. And so, yeah, we hope to be a real, you know, practical tool to be a bit of that glue.
What resistance have you faced? And I'll frame it in this way. For you, Dan, you talked about how there was a land and a time before the internet. And
I'm old.
And no, well,
the land before time.
You're
seven movies about that.
You're experienced, very, very wise. But the technology landscape is always changing, mm-hmm. and you have to keep up with it. And among your art peers, have you faced any resistance? Or I guess what have you faced in terms of that, in terms of artists who maybe have been slow to embrace technology or may find it as a barrier maybe to how they want to conduct their art careers?
Right. Well, I have to say that the resistance is deep in artists, especially artists who've been around for a long while, like myself, including me. I first heard of people drawing with computers back in 1991. And I can't say it was the word Photoshop was around or that I heard it. But I was in the Marine Corps in those days. And then and someone told me, they all knew, everybody around me knew I could draw and I was good at it. And then someone tried to convince me to go to their office so I could see how people could draw on the computer. And my first reaction was, that's not real art. And I did not go. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to talk about it. You know, you draw with pencils or, you know, the traditional media that we all know about. And now, 20-some years later, I mean, you can't get away from a computer. The smartphone is a computer. And I see artists who don't want to touch the digital media. And that's fine. You don't have to. But if you want to connect to a wider audience at a price point that is within your means, then you're going to have to. You can sell artwork around the world physically, but it takes much more time and it's a bigger hassle than if you had a website that sold prints and you shipped it and you got the customer online when they were still in their home, in their home country. I've done art shows where I've had buyers from England and Finland. And I was lucky that they were here when they saw the artwork, so I convinced them to take the artwork with them. Because I did not want to ship it. It would cost as much as the piece was what they were paying, you know? And so when you look at technology today and the things that it can do for you and for especially a career in artists, because our business is in the visual field, you have to take into account that it can open your world and expand your reach And but some artists are really don't trust it. I understand. That's just general public. We feel some artists feel that our art will get copied and printed some other part of the world when you post something online. That's a big possibility. We feel that once the artwork is out in the internet, you lose control of who can access it and how do you profit from it at that time. And this happened. I've had artists whose art was used to create websites, and their art is all part of the web design, and they didn't even know. No one told them. No one came to them and said, we'd like to use your art for this template. I know artists who's, including myself, whose art was put in a store online and sold as stickers, and it was my artwork. I'm looking at it, and they posted it on Facebook. And it was mind-boggling to me that somebody who knows me and knows that's my art, they took it, they made a product out of it, they posted it on the Facebook, and here I am seeing it and saying, wait a minute, when did this guy ask me for permission? It's a real risk, but in the end, I feel that I have much more to create after this. You may be able to copy one thing or profit from this one thing, but that's all you got. You're going to have to come back for some more if you want some more of this art style that I have. And, of course, there are protections that are part of the law that you should, as an artist who's in business, should be aware of and use. But in the end, you can't let that stop you. And a lot of artists feel that that's not something that they want to get into. I have a hard time convincing people that they should do that. But it's really up to the artist. Just like art is subjective, so it is what this artist thinks success is and what their career should be like. So you can't get mad at them. I do sometimes get a little frustrated. But you can't get mad. You said, okay, cool. It's not for you. You know. But I think the younger generation of artists, they started with the digital from the get-go. There are artists who are in their teens and insane skills, insane digital skills, and they're using Photoshop to create just amazing paintings, and they're like, wow. Somebody, if I had had a tablet when I was a kid and a stylus, yes, I'd be here where you are with that, you know. So it's not lost. The technology, the use of technology today for the art field, it will not be lost. There's artists born every day, you know, so there's plenty of room for them to grow.
James, same question in terms of what resistance have you faced even as you've tried to attract more artists or more arts communities to Finestra, whether it be the artists themselves, galleries, you know, what have you experienced up to this point?
We've had a really good reception, really good response as far as a first impression goes. A lot of people can see there's something unique here, something different that they haven't seen before. And then it's, you know, it's a matter of, you know, from a gallery's perspective, you know, a lot of them, they're very, very business minded. You know, some of them were like, well, they want it to be their own, right? They want it to have their own gallery app, and some of them maybe have, or you know, but they're thinking in a very exclusive sense still. You know, we're trying to move towards a vision that's more about, you know, the community while promoting your gallery, while promoting, you know, the individual talents of your artists, but being a part of an idea of something that you know, brings art as a whole to a different level in the community by being a part of it. But then, you know, it's not a lot of effort, but it's something new. You know, people are afraid of, you know, something new and you know, take some time to, you know, set aside, start working on it, and, you know, add some artwork and share it. And then for the artists, one of the, I will mention, I mean, there's a few resistance points, but one of the biggest ones is the recording your voice piece. You know, if you walk up to someone and you're at a show and you see their artwork and you walk up to them and say, "Hey, tell me about your piece," you know, that seems normal. But now you're going to press record on something that's, you know, staring, you know, that's like right now, you know, it's a broadcast, you know, then you get a little more self-conscious. There's a little more intimidation to it, but there really shouldn't be at all. I mean, and I think that's what we're trying to help artists understand, is that this is just a conversation. And that's really where we want to take it more in the future too, is to get artists comfortable with their voice, comfortable with you know, knowing that they do have something to say, because, you know, that's what their art is already doing. So operating out of that confidence that they do have something to say, and then you know, just saying something about the work is really valuable. And so and then like, you know, continuing to do it, continuing to add artwork, continuing to stir the other artists that are in the community, you know, of Finestra. I think, you know, just encouraging people to use it as a tool is a challenge. And help get the word out. The more we get the word out on it, then the more it's going to increase, you know, their experience and their buyers as well.
Do either of you have questions for each other in terms of what you've learned more about each other up to this point? I know you all have already met before, obviously, but still, in terms of this conversation, whether it's about Finestra or art life, what questions do you have of each other?
I've already asked him. I said, "When are you going to make me the curator? I bring you lots of artists and art." But I know they're focused. They have a roadmap that they're focused on. I'm not mad at it. I'm not waiting on them to make me their curator.
Yeah.
But I've asked. I'm very hyped about Finestra. Really am, and the opportunities that it brings to artists. So anytime I have an opportunity to bring them in to talk about their app, they're there. You know, so I've asked them to come and participate, meet the artists. And I think it's important for artists to meet who they are.
Yeah.
Because that builds the trust, and then they will use the app. Then if it's just an app that's out there, no name corporation, you know, that's, artists are very particular about their art. They're very possessive. So it's very helpful that they come out and talk. And they've done it every time I asked.
Good, yeah, people. And I really appreciate the invitations too. I mean, that's absolutely one of our shifts, is, you know, we've been kind of heads down, you know, developing it. But after that, you know, we just really want to be out in the community as much as we can. And I learn so much when I go out. And so I love those opportunities. You know, Dan, I would, with your, I mean, the game, you said this is like your life. This is your life in a lot of ways. And so, one question I had was, you know, cause you look at art from the creative side and the business side, like how to get ahead. And, you know, how do you foresee artists, using the game and, you know, making them think about how they actually run their own business, or how does that play out in the design of the game?
So the game is Art Life, and it's more of a interactive experience of what an artist goes through, and it's told to those who don't know it. So our customers could be artists, because they see the pencils, they see the whole theme of it being Art Life, and they may see themselves in some of these characters. They see the level of commitment and competition that it takes to play the game, and they may relate to the stories, because we've, as artists, when we come up, we have rivals. We have other artists who are in our class or in our school. you know, and you compare yourself, and you always say, "Nah, my art is better," you know, or you have artists you look up to, and who are doing big things in the big in the national, international stage, and you're like, "I want to be like that. I want to be Frank Miller. I want to be Simon Bisley. You know, I want to be this big artist, Rockwell." But and so that's what so artists will may be able to relate to that, but I also want to bring in people who find it fun to interact with these characters and learn that the challenge that I've simplified into a game that you use two thumbs with on a smartphone,
right.
You know. But also our other customer is children who like animated characters, who like colorful characters, and their moms who are looking for entertainment that is nonviolent, that it doesn't have hookers and police car chases, people getting run over and shootouts, you know, or military teams running in a war zone. It's a form of entertainment. It has some educational elements, but it's an experience and that is healthy and non-damaging. Yeah, that's what we're looking for. That's our message.
Oh, and I think it's awesome. I mean, I think the combination of the fun, the story, and really, I mean, I think those pieces are awesome. The educational aspect of it, though, I think is huge.
Yeah, I need to focus on that more. Come up with a better answer. Yeah, that would be good.
I don't know. I mean, I think that's what I'm curious about. For me, as you know, when I think about Finestra and the community as a whole, I think so much of the barrier is just a lack of understanding of the art world and how artists think, like a feeling that there's a certain kind of language you need to have in order mm-hmm. to talk about artwork or talk with artists. And that's just a lie, you know, it's not true. I mean, there may be some words that, you know, or maybe some things that you know, but I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's inspiring, and it's going to be inspiring for a variety of people.
It's a new twist. It's a different twist to something that's becoming so common now. When you say there's a sea of apps, there literally are, you know. And so, how did you differentiate yourself? You know, Angry Birds is going to continue to make a new Angry Birds because their formula worked, you know. But how many versions of that can you make? And some of these other games, you know. So then, if that's the space you want to work in, then don't try to find what's the next gimmick, but look to your story. Right. What story do you have? You know, I have lots of stories. This is not the only game that I'm going to make. You know, I'm born in L.A., but my parents are from Mexico. I have lots of Aztec stories to tell. I've studied history all my life. I love it. I love the history of the Aztecs. That's a game.
Oh, sure.
You know, and it could be educational. It tells a story, and it tells some of the history, and educational to those who don't know it, and educational to those who think we know it until we realize some of the truths that are, you know, been forgotten and stuff. So, yeah, is what new element can you bring to something that's already being used? Instead of just saying, well, there's money there. There's somebody making money on the apps. Let's jump in and do it and make some money, too. You know, I think it's we are creative people coming up with creative ideas and see these apps and mediums as a way to get the message out first.
Well, as we wrap up, James and Dan, let everyone know again, just for clarity's sake, where they can find out more about your work and your apps and your game. Just give all of the official information and places where everyone should go to find out and connect with the both of you.
Sure, I'll go ahead. To put this little nugget in people's minds, Finestra is Italian for window. That's why it's not a self-help drug. sometimes people get confused with that. But it's good to know that because it helps you remember what the word is, where it comes from. It's also spelled fine with art spelled backwards on the end of it. It's Finestra Art App. That is our online identity pretty much in everything. That's our website, finestraartapp.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those typical places. That's where you can find us, get connected, and definitely in the App Store. We're only on iPhone right now, but you can definitely pull out your iPhone and search for Finestra and download it for free.
Dan.
All right. So my name is Daniel Flores, but I go by the name of DTM. That stands for Dan the Man. That goes way back to high school days. Dan the Man, DTM. But if you Google me, The Creative Genius, D-A Creative Genius. Anything that comes up with D-A Creative Genius, The Creative Genius, that's me. You can find my personal website, deltatangomike.com. And there's my bio and access to all the websites and organizations that I help and work on. And then the game, the mobile game, is artlifethegame.com. And we have a Kickstarter campaign in progress right now. And you can just search for it on Kickstarter, Art Life The Game. Or there are links from the website, artlifethegame.com. And on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, one word, Art Life The Game. Thank you.
James, Dan, thank you both.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by Octane Coffee, with locations on the West Side, Grant Park, the Pocket Bar in the Bank of America Plaza, and even the newest outpost in Birmingham, Alabama. For more information, please visit octanecoffee.com.